My memory came alive to see Mrs. Radley occasionally open the front door, walk to the edge of the porch, and pour water on her cannas. But every day Jim and I would see Mr. Radley walking to and from town. He was a thin, leathery man with colorless eyes, so colorless they did not reflect light. His cheekbones were sharp, and his mouth was wide, with a thin upper lip and a full lower lip. Miss Stephanie Crawford said he was so upright he took the word of God as his only law, and we believed her, because Mr. Radley's posture was ramrod straight. He never spoke to us. When he passed, we would look at the ground and say, "Good morning, sir," and he would cough in reply. Mr. Radley's elder son lived in Pensacola. He came home at Christmas, and he was one of the few persons we ever saw enter or leave the place. From the day Mr. Radley took Arthur home, people said the house died. But there came a day when Atticus told us he'd wear us out if we made any noise in the yard, and commissioned Calpurnia to serve in his absence if she heard a sound out of us. Mr. Radley was dying. He took his time about it. Wooden sawhorses blocked the road at each end of the Radley lot. Straw was put down on the sidewalk. Traffic was diverted to the back street. Dr. Reynolds parked his car in front of our house and walked to the Radleys every time he called. Jim and I crept around the yard for days. At last the sawhorses were taken away, and we stood watching from the front porch when Mr. Radley made his final journey past our house. "There goes the meanest man ever God blew breath into," murmured Calpurnia, and she spat meditatively into the yard. We looked at her in surprise, for Calpurnia rarely commented on the ways of white people. The neighborhood thought when Mr. Radley went under, Boo would come out, but it had another think coming. Boo's elder brother returned from Pensacola and took Mr. Radley's place. The only difference between him and his father was their ages. Jim said Mr. Nathan Radley bought cotton, too. Mr. Nathan would speak to us, however, when we said good morning, and sometimes we saw him coming from town with a magazine in his hand. The more we told Dill about the Radleys, the more he wanted to know. The longer he would stand hugging the light pole on the corner, the more he would wonder. "Wonder what he does in there," he would murmur. "Looks like he'd just stick his head out the door." Jim said, "He goes out all right when it's pitch dark." Miss Stephanie Crawford said she woke up in the middle of the night one time and saw him looking straight through the window at her, said his head was like a skull looking at her. "Ain't you ever waked up at night and heard him, Dill? He walks like this." Jim slid his feet through the gravel. "Why do you think Miss Rachel locks up so tight at night? I've seen his tracks in our backyard many a morning, and one night I heard him scratching on the back screen, but he was gone time Atticus got there." "Wonder what he looks like," said Dill. Jim gave a reasonable description of Boo. Boo was about 6.5 feet tall, judging from his tracks. He dined on raw squirrels and any cats he could catch. That's why his hands were blood-stained. If you ate an animal raw, you could never wash the blood off. There was a long, jagged scar that ran across his face. What teeth he had were yellow and rotten. His eyes popped, and he drooled most of the time. "Let's try to make him come out," said Dill. "I'd like to see what he looks like." Jim said if Dill wanted to get himself killed, all he had to do was go up and knock on the front door. Our first raid came to pass only because Dill bet Jim, the gray ghost, against 2 Tom Swifts that Jim wouldn't get any farther than the Radley gate. In all his life, Jim had never declined a dare. Jim thought about it for 3 days. I suppose he loved honor more than his head, for Dill wore him down easily. "You're scared," Dill said the first day. "Ain't scared, just respectful," Jim said. The next day, Dill said, "You're too scared even to put your big toe in the front yard." Jim said he reckoned he wasn't. He passed the Radley place every school day of his life. "Always running," I said. But Dill got him the third day when he told Jim that folks in Meridian certainly weren't as afraid as the folks in Macomb, that he'd never seen such scary folks as the ones in Macomb. This was enough to make Jim march to the corner where he stopped and leaned against the light pole, watching the gate hanging crazily on its homemade hinge. "I hope you've got it through your head that he'll kill us each and every one, Dill Harris," said Jim when we joined him. "Don't blame me when he gouges your eyes out. You started it, remember?" "You're still scared," murmured Dill patiently. Jim wanted Dill to know once and for all that he wasn't scared of anything. "It's just that I can't think of a way to make him come out without him getting us. Besides, Jim had his little sister to think of." When he said that, I knew he was afraid. Jim had his little sister to think of the time I dared him to jump off the top of the house. "If I got killed, what'd become of you?" he asked. Then he jumped, landed unhurt, and his sense of responsibility left him until confronted by the Radley place. "You gonna run out on a dare?" asked Dill. "If you are, then, Dill, you have to think about these things," Jim said. "Let me think a minute. It's sort of like making a turtle come out." "How's that?" asked Dill. "Strike a match under him. I told Jim if he set fire to the Radley house, I was going to tell Atticus on him." Dill said striking a match under a turtle was hateful. "Ain't hateful, just persuades him. It's not like you'd chunk him in the fire," Jim growled. "How do you know a match don't hurt him?" "Turtles can't feel, stupid," said Jim. "Were you ever a turtle, huh?" "My stars, Dill, now let me think. Reckon we can rock him." Jim stood and thought so long that Dill made a mild concession. "I won't say you ran out on a dare, and I'll swap you the gray ghost if you just go up and touch the house." Jim brightened. "Touch the house? That's all?" Dill nodded. "Sure, that's all now. I don't want you hollering something different the minute I get back." "Yeah, that's all," said Dill. "He'll probably come out after you when he sees you in the yard. Then Scout and me'll jump on him and hold him down till we can tell him we ain't going to hurt him." We left the corner, crossed the side street that ran in front of the Radley house, and stopped at the gate. "Well, go on," said Dill. "Scout and me's right behind you." "I'm going," said Jim. "Don't hurry me." He walked to the corner of the lot, then back again, studying the simple terrain as if deciding how best to effect an entry, frowning and scratching his head. Then I sneered at him. Jim threw open the gate and sped to the side of the house, slapped it with his palm, and ran back past us, not waiting to see if his foray was successful. Dill and I followed on his heels. Safely on our porch, panting and out of breath, we looked back. The old house was the same, droopy and sick. But as we stared down the street, we thought we saw an inside shutter move. Flick! A tiny, almost invisible movement, and the house was still.